Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
I'm curious about one of the major BRICS goals, the BRICS currency. Around the question of desolidarization. So this is really something that intrigues me. What is the agenda of the BRICS currency?
Is there any document of BRICS which talks about the BRICS currency?
We read the newspapers. I mean, I'm not saying that it's in your coming roadmap. I don't know about South Africa. That's the question.
I'm saying precisely because we had a number of people talking about the BRICS currency and so on. To my knowledge, there's never been a discussion about the BRICS currency. It does not even exist on our documents, on our declarations.
So it's not a project.
What is there are two things. The first one is to say we must begin to page each other in terms of local currencies.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, there's not, which we do. My neighbors are Botswana. I'm not paying them in dollars. I'm paying them in rands.
Mm-hmm.
So they are willing to accept rands as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm dealing with the Chinese, there's no reason they cannot accept my rand.
Mm-hmm.
All we're talking about is recognizing common local currencies when we trade amongst each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. The another thing which the central bankers are dealing with is a payment system.
Mm-hmm.
So these BRICS currencies, like you, I read about it when I...
Everywhere.
let me just tell you, the Chinese have got a strong currency, the renminbi,
mm-hmm.
and they've got ambitions of getting that currency, being a reserve currency.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they leave that ambition in the interest of an abstract notion of a BRICS currency?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is a conversation that took place at the IMF World Bank Week at the Atlantic Council, held earlier in Washington, D.C. between the week of October 21st to October 27th. Now, that would have been the voice of our finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, speaking to a reporter from the IMF World Bank Week, essentially raising questions around the BRICS currency and if we would actually see a BRICS currency being implemented or launched by the BRICS member stations, as well as participation there. This clip is one that we're playing for you, a good friend and colleague from National Treasury, who was reminding us of the construct and conversation that took place. And it is in response to a tweet that was published by President-elect of the United States, Donald Trump, who highlighted and threatened essentially to impose 100% tariffs on BRICS and the bloc of nine nations that are part of our union should we create a rival currency to the US dollar. There's a long tweet here, but essentially Donald Trump says, the BRICS countries should impose or try to remove the US dollar while we stand by, that time is over. Otherwise, they'll have to find another quote-unquote sucker. There's no chance that BRICS will replace the US dollar in international trade, and any country that tries should wave goodbye to America. So deep threats that are certainly being made here by Donald Trump, especially ahead of his inauguration in January. To help us contextualize this and understand these conversations that are taking place, we join on the line by political economist Professor Patrick Bond to help us share some analysis of these concerns here. Such a pleasure to have you, Professor Bond, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Guguletta, and hi to the listeners too.
I guess first things first, Donald Trump and his tariffs, significant and strong threats that he made in his latest tweet this weekend. Your reaction in response to this?
Well, I'm glad you read it and that you read Enoch Godongwana's statement you played it. You know, it's Trump, the greatest con man in world history. No one can dispute that. Occasionally, he follows through on threats. South Africa has been a victim. Do you remember 2018? He did some whimsical cuts in U.S. imports of South African steel and aluminium.
Yes.
And we can expect the same basically with AGOA. I think he'll probably chop it. So that is a huge chunk of 60 billion rand a year, because he thinks South Africa is upset. And even though we're hosting the G20 in November in Johannesburg, I doubt he'll come. I mean, this is a maniac. Now, his tweet, I don't think, reflected an understanding of reality. which is the reality that Enoch Godongwana said, which is that there is no de-dollarization. And I deeply regret that, because having once worked at the U.S. Federal Reserve, I think they do an enormous amount of damage with their quantitative easing, their money printing, and then their ability to influence global interest rates, which, as you recall, 2022, 23, before, they've just come down. These interest rate increases caused African bankruptcies in Ghana, in Zambia, and in Ethiopia at the sovereign level, and so many of us, you know, suffering high interest rates and debt repayments across the board, thanks to the U.S. Fed. So I think de-dollarization is necessary, but Trump is, in a way, bullying the wrong group, because they've already said that they're not going to do a de-dollarization.
And that's the point, right? It almost seems as though there's a bullying here and a tactic to actually corner BRICS nations and African economy cowering into pleading and begging with the U.S. to access their market. As you've mentioned, AGOA, it does seem as though we might see him, you know, cut ties there, essentially. But what impact will this have on trade for markets and regions like BRICS?
Well, though threatening 100% tariff increase, he may, well, he's already said 10% for Mexico, for Canada. They're obviously trying to negotiate, Sheinbaum in Mexico and Trudeau in Canada having discussions with them. So January 20 may be a very decisive time for, it's an inflection point, because Biden is, although he kept the Trump era protections against Chad some more, 100% tariffs on electric vehicles and solar panels and batteries. Nevertheless, what Trump is doing is going to be at another level. He's trying to promise his Rust Belt voters, the manufacturing sector, that he's going to stop many products coming in, and his protectionism will certainly affect South Africa. The key sectors we can expect, the aluminium and steel, petrochemicals, automobiles, probably the wine and some of the citrus and grape exports. And that, as I said, $60 billion a year may then shrink. We may have a boom, because if you take electricity away from some of those real guzzlers in the smelters, petrochems, cars, when you give it to small businesses and labor, intensive industry and households, maybe that's actually a hidden, let's say, benefit of Trump's protectionism for South Africa. Don't forget, 1930s, the worst protectionism recorded in modern history, the Smoot-Hawley tariffs in the U.S. that kicked off this terrible trade war at the time. South Africa boomed. We started manufacturing a sort of wide variety of goods that were previously imported. Our balancing of secondary industry of the sort of clothing, textiles, fruit and vegetable canning. We got into the furniture and all the other sorts of, you know, appliances, later electronics. These all reflected that South Africa had quite a balanced economy, notwithstanding, of course, apartheid, but it was balanced in terms of the sectors of the economy. And because of the globalization process, we lost a huge chunk, about half the manufacturing. So maybe if we look at it a little bit differently, that there are opportunities from a protectionist period to grow locally. The problem is, of course, that we're still importing mostly East Asian goods, and that would be something that I think, with the BRICS as strong as they are in South Africa, not willing to really put on the, well, occasionally the International Trade Administration Commission does put on tariffs on Chinese dumping, but, you know, we're losing huge chunks of steel and other industries. So I think what Trump is proposing with his, let me call it a paleo-conservative, that's the term they use for their ideology, not a neoliberal conservative, but a really dinosaur nativist, you know, insular and isolationist politics, which might include shouting at other countries if they don't like the U.S. dollar. Well, it's going to be a rough ride ahead, isn't it? But it could be good if we take advantage of it and grow locally.
I'm so glad that you mentioned perhaps taking advantage of it. There was an interesting debate one of my peers had recently, essentially evaluating the fact that Republican presidencies have often served the African continent very well, because instead of looking to the U.S. not only for trade or aid, we've then fostered a heightened level of integration. And as you've highlighted in the example that you led, actually optimism in terms of facilitating trade amongst African countries. Is that perhaps the new opportunity? And how do you see not only BRICS nations, but even member states on the African continent optimizing enhanced partnership and trade here amongst themselves?
Well, again, Yeah, it's because Trump is so anti-African. He used the term S-hole. Well, I won't spell out the S to describe African countries. Will he come to Johannesburg for the G20 in November 2025? He takes over G20 in 2026. He's the least cooperative and most, let's say, aggressively imperialist president. Now, the dilemma is that, as you pointed out at the intro, there are a lot of BRICS leaders. I just listened to several Indian leaders speaking about the implications of BRICS, trying very, very mild-mannered, let's say, trade-related currency deals like India has with Russia. But the trade imbalances are the big problem. So that means that actually the BRICS are, as even Vladimir Putin said a couple of weeks ago in his Valdai Economic Summit, that there is no intention of de-dollarization. They really, unfortunately, still will rely on the dollars in spite of the problems that I've mentioned. Now, the dilemma here, again, is that you've got a layer like Enoch Anangwana, like Lesego Kanyako, our Reserve Bank governor, Sim Tshabalala. Do you recall Google Letter in August 2023 when we hosted the BRICS in Sandton?
Yes.
They were very explicit. We in South Africa, we in Johannesburg, we in Pretoria, we do not want to break ties with Western finance. The same would be said in São Paulo, in Brazil, in the capital of financial capital. The same would be said in Mumbai, even Shanghai. And as Putin said himself, you know, from Moscow, they're also looking to re-dollarize once the war is over and energy sales resume. And we saw this, by the way, in China's sales of U.S. dollar bonds for Saudi Arabia. The first time this has happened, a Chinese government issuance of bonds so that Saudi Arabia could borrow. You know, they'll obviously lend in dollars, lend in euros, whatever they've got in reserves through the BRICS Bank and the Asian. In fact, many, many banks lend in currencies not of their national origin. But this is a sort of strange counterfeiting, and it goes against those who think the BRICS will de-dollarize. In other words, what I think we're now seeing is a re-dollarization. And I find that a tragedy, and we really need to get off that dollar dependence, find a new currency that isn't so influenced by the U.S. Fed, the Treasury, and Wall Street.
So you think that should be prioritized, the de-dollarization, and does it just lean, I guess, towards the renminbi or Chinese yuan?
You see, they don't want to. And the reason is simple. They use exchange controls to control their own flows of finance, their control over big data.
Yes.
I don't think Beijing would give those up and try to become a world currency. They don't have the material power to do so. So it's unfortunately, a period in which there's a lot of talk about de-dollarization. Let me call it talk left. And then walk right, a re-dollarization in reality.
Got you. This is so important for us to bear in mind, and I guess it's going to be so intriguing to see what does transpire once Trump does enter the White House once again. But as you say, I guess this is a prime opportunity for African nations and BRICS partners themselves to be prepared to tap into opportunities to enhance growth here amongst themselves if done correctly.
Yes, and that's the big dilemma, because we unfortunately still in Sandton, in Johannesburg, maybe among your listeners, we have too many Western gazing businesses, and they're caught in this, and you know, or let's call it the gray listing phenomenon, which illicit financial flows and all of the other financial criminality that occurs in Sandton, which PwC ranked number one in the world for economic crime and fraud for so many years in the 2010s. And you know, it really is a time to ask some tough questions. Donald Trump asks them in a way that just distracts us. I mean, he's absolutely going to be a wrecking ball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to be able to take advantage of it. In the 1930s, South Africa grew at 8% per year and grew the manufacturing center sector dramatically because of delinking, because of not relying so much, thanks to the Great Depression and World War II. But that was the sort of lesson I would take from this, that we shouldn't be reliant on the dollar or any of the BRICS hype about, you know, a new currency or whatever they're arguing might be some sort of countervailing force. I don't see them as anti-imperialist in any way, really. They, especially with the de-dollarization talk, re-dollarization action, they look like they're sub-imperialists.
100%. Such a pleasure to speak to you, sir. This is going to be an interesting debate, and whether it's around the boardrooms, dinner table, or school drop-offs, parking lots, I think there's a lot to be said around how the U.S. presidency is going to influence the rest of the world in the next 4 years. Thank you again for your time, Professor Bond.
Yeah, thank you. Great to be with you.
Thank you. That's Professor Patrick Bond, political economist, sharing his perspective on Donald Trump's threats of increasing and imposing tariffs on BRICS nations should they decide to implement a different currency to the US dollar. But I must tell you, we played a very important clip that provided perspective from our South African minister, Enoch Godongwana, on the perspective of BRICS, that essentially BRICS partners and their peers trade in currencies that make sense to the countries that they trade with, whether it's rands between local currencies or using the Chinese yuan. No documentation has been put in place to lead to the de-dollarization of trade. Instead, BRICS countries are just focusing on trading in currencies that make sense to their peers and participation.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.